break. It's a mini episode.
Hello and welcome to another mini-soda. You gotta check this out with Mike and Dre. I'm the Mike, and today we have several clips taken from last week with Carl Wolf. The Last Starfighter graphics, 80s dark fantasy, Peter McNichol, the Epsilon 3 distraction target, unraveling time travel, and Carl's Narn scene that may have been copied into the Babylon 5 role-playing book are all in there. I'll see you at the other end.
Okay, Carl, I'm going to ask you this right now because this is a contentious subject.
Yeah.
On Babylon 5, I don't know whose decision, but the flashbacks, the internal memory scenes that were used a ton for Talia, they just don't work for me. And there are so many, like, there are multiple scenes of Michael York dreaming about, like, grabbing a sword, about, like, what's going on. He's, like, running through a hallway with, like, muted music. And I'm just like, what the hell is going on?
Well, but you can see that, like, that hallway of many doors is mirrored again in the future episode Zaha Doom, when they get into the Shadow's dark city and you see a similar corridor of many doors. And so you can see that kind of imagery has been bouncing around in JMS's head for a while.
So behind the curtains, which is anti-kayfabe, before the show, Mike misused the term kayfabe. For those that don't know, in wrestling parlance, kayfabe is an actor, a wrestler, portraying something as real. They've got a story and they're going to keep to it. I hate Hulk Hogan. They're best buds. They room together. But no, when you see us in public, I hate it. And what I have to give JMS is JMS did have kayfabe. As you mentioned, Michael O'Hare had to leave the show because of mental issues that were not revealed until his death. And for years, JMS kept up a very reliable story. And in fact, something that probably gave him away a little bit was on the DVD commentaries that I'm sure we've all listened to. Carl, how many times have you heard the DVD commentaries on the Babylon 5s?
Oh, yeah, a few times.
I was shocked that he skipped these two. So
yes.
There are behind-the-scenes featurettes on the various DVDs, and they're sparse because the show was a shoestring budget. So you'll hear me say it a million times. I was shocked he did not do a behind-the-scenes one on this episode. And the reason was, I'm guessing he just didn't think he'd be able to, like, reliably do this episode without giving stuff away.
Yeah, I sat down for probably my third watching of this two-parter in prepare. Is okay, this is going to be the one where I watch it with JMS talking to me the whole time. I put on the DVD, and I was just surprised. I assumed there would be a commentary for this one.
Well, JMS, actually, he did a couple additional episodes of commentary online the past couple of years. I think, you know, primarily through COVID. I don't know how many he's done since then, but I'm not sure if he's done this at all, but he did reference, you know, obviously O'Hare's issues. But there's a line that JMS had said that I really appreciate is, you know, writing is kind of like performing a live act while people are throwing knives and chainsaws at you. So you just have to, like, roll with the punches, and you have to have plan B, plan C, plan D to factor in, you know, actors leaving or getting sick or this or that. So yeah, definitely this was a contingency plan, not part of the original plan, but he, I think, worked it out beautifully. I have one more little point. So I just wanted to say, from a kind of visual connection, so I first learned about Babylon 5 in 1992. There was an article in a magazine about the special effects that they were developing because it was groundbreaking at the time. And I was in high school and I was fascinated, and I kind of was looking out for Babylon 5 when the pilot finally aired. And so one of the big kind of graphic CGI things were the Vorlon ships, which we never saw again, really, until this episode. We finally got all the glory shots. And then the very last scene was Kasha's ship, you know, flying into the sun. And so, like, for me, it was like this connection, like, going back 10 years or more, you know. So that was kind of an interesting little observation.
Yeah. What really got you into all the CGI? You mentioned in high school, this would have been like late 80s, early 90s kind of graphics. What else was going on at that time that kind of was leading up to Babylon 5?
Really, the only thing would be The Last Starfighter. That was really the first bit of media that kind of relied completely on CGI. And so even like the Star Furies resemble the Gunstars, you know, having the four thrusters and that kind of stuff. So it kind of makes me wonder if some of the artists, you know, might have ported over. Yeah, so CGI was kind of being used, but never to that degree. And so it was groundbreaking, which was intriguing because, like, it finally gotten cheap enough where Bab 5, with its shoestring budget, could afford to do it and make it look good, especially once it got the second season, it just took off to the point where Star Trek pillaged Foundation from Bab 5. Mm-hmm. So, so there wasn't much. So Bab 5 was, groundbreaking in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, my favorite visuals were always anything that was dark fantasy from the 80s was always my jam.
Oh, yes.
Like Dark Crystal and Labyrinth, Dragon Slayer, that movie was like huge for me, like as a kid.
Explorers, they used a bit of CGI as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dragon Slayer was, what's the guy? He was in Ghostbusters 2.
Peter McNichol. I was reading an article recently about it, how he he had a very boring role in Ghostbusters 2, and he gave the guy a backstory that he was actually from the same country as Viggo the Destroyer, and that's why he has the funny accent and stuff. And
I've been seeing him all over. He was in Adam's Family Values as one of the counselors for when they made that Thanksgiving play where Wednesday brought everybody to kill all of the settlers as the pilgrims at the end with David Krumholtz.
And amazingly enough, Dragon Slayer also has future WNBA phenom Caitlin Clark.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
is this the right audience for that? No.
Anyway. Yeah, half of it probably. We have six listeners. Three of them probably listen to basketball. But yeah, Peter McNichol was cast as like the dashing hero in that movie way before any of the Ghostbusters 2 or Adam's Family Values stuff.
Or Ally McBeal would probably be the biggest. That's where I knew him from.
Yep.
Carl, just having you here, I got to ask this. What was Zaha Doom like?
Dude, it was really the pinnacle of the whole year because the Z-minus countdown had been going on for months by that point. Because sometimes you get these really long breaks in between episodes. And I remember that night incredibly vividly. We all piled in the car and, it was right after Shadow Dancing and Anna Sheridan showed up. We're like, what the fuck is going on? And we're just bouncing all these crazy ideas, about the nature of the shadows and the Vorlons and, how it might tie into, different, areas of existence and blah, blah, blah. And it was the most amazing experience. It was the highlight of Babylon 5 in a lot of ways. It's hard to put in words.
I was also going to say, because that's going to be the next one we're covering for sure. So people make sure to watch, if you're watching along, absolutely get caught up watching it. Because what I will say, hopefully this isn't too much of a spoiler, right, Mike? But at least for the first three seasons, when he thought he had a five-year arc, JMS made sure every single season ended on a major cliffhanger. It was intentional. Mm-hmm. It wasn't to bash the enemy, to bash Star Trek. It wasn't like when they had the Borg thing with Picard, and that was really just contract negotiations, and it fizzled. JMS would end every season with a bang, and you're like, what did he do? And then the next season he'd have to come back and he would leave it there and it would leave a big gaping hole that he would have to fill. And season three's finale, I just can't imagine watching that live and then being told, hey, by the way, have a fun summer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
could you imagine? It was like a lot of shows where there wasn't one showrunner, like in comics, where you try to do the biggest thing you can at the end of your comics run, just do something insane, have all the heroes be stranded in another dimension or something, and okay, you fix it, next person.
Except but that opening itself. Scene where Anna Sheridan says, "You didn't tell her," became a catchphrase for weeks because it went straight into the opening music and then the commercial, and so we were just going bananas. And then that, of course, that scene where Sheridan is on the balcony over the Dark City and Anna's there holding her hand up and the music's swelling, and then it gives me goosebumps.
Make sure to watch Zaha Doom, everybody. And I would say that's probably the best episode. I've thought about it. I've ranked it, even putting War Without an End parts 1 and 2 together, which is ridiculous. And we're about to talk that.
Yeah, it's like they do use Epsilon 3 for so much in there. But I like how he doesn't overuse it. It's like once every 10 or 12 episodes.
He doesn't use that much. And what I do like in story that is kind of explained is a lot of the ancient races, Vorlons included, Epsilon 3, are kind of like, the universe is too vast and we're just going to stay out of it. Or it is sometimes explained as they don't care. That's Carr does that in one episode. He's when they're like, why don't these things do this? And he's just, do you care about an ant? So I do. Yeah. Epsilon 3 is an overpowered device. There is a lot of Deus Ex Machina in Babylon 5. But when you're like, why don't they do that every episode? You're like, because they don't care. And it's explained that they don't care.
Well, it's like, how do you use magic as a writer? It's all writing on some level is an art of deception. And I think that JMS did a good job with Epsilon 3 because, hey, we have this great, powerful thing we could use to solve any problem at any time. So as a writer, how often can you get away with pulling on that thread enough where it doesn't break our brains? Or like, why couldn't you just use Epsilon 3 again?
Yeah, they give reasonable reasons that nerds like us aren't going to overthink it. Although I'm going to, again, going to keep going to the well. This is what I do to every guest, Carl. You're a little different, right? And then I'm asking you to remember the past, not the present, which is hilarious. Maybe that relates. You're the one who was. Normal guests are the ones who are.
You're our Babylon 4. We're just going to bring you back.
But how much of the, like, picking at the time travel stuff in the real time were you doing? And this was a two-parter, so you had some time to, like, maybe start putting dots together.
Well, we were initially rolling with the punches. I remember being really impressed with the when Delenn actually had like surviving video footage from 1,000 years ago. I'm like, wow, they really are the elves. We didn't really start picking it apart. We didn't find too much issue with it the first time round. We immediately pulled out the recording of Babylon Squared. And we watched that right after and then watched this again. And we're like, it flows in perfectly. And then obviously part two would come out and that kind of also that was mind blowing. And then we had to like rewatch all of season like two. And actually, we started from the very beginning. Yeah. We spent like all week rewatching the whole series just to pick out the little bits and pieces and the hints like he was planning it from the very beginning. But this is, I think, like you were saying, like this was a recovery from a potential catastrophe. But JMS, you know, was a true magician. He didn't let us see the trick going on. And we just at the time felt like he was taking care of us and he knew exactly what he was doing. But I think that's, you know, gives insight into his powers of a writer to build all these kind of contingency plans into it so that when he was facing a catastrophe, he could still pull it together in a way that was very wizardly, shall we say.
A little bit of backstory. We didn't discuss this episode, but there's an episode in season one called Babylon Squared. And the mythos of the show is this is the fifth Babylon station, fifth and final, we're told in the intro. And there were four stations before it. And the story is 1, 2, and 3 were all sabotaged and destroyed. And Babylon 4 disappeared right after going online. And in season one, there is this weird temporal wormhole. And they managed to find Babylon 4. They managed to get everybody off of it. And then it disappears. And so they do at least know, hey, it disappears in time. So there's something going on there. And this was obviously a very big Chekhov's gun where we literally have Captain Sinclair. He goes to Babylon 4. Later, we see a future version of Sinclair touched by Delenn, but we just hear her voice. JMS loves doing this where we know the voice, but we don't see the character in frame. So it's Sinclair is older. He's got a cheek scar. Delenn's touching him all nicely, retconned later. And he's just, it all happened just like I thought it would. And you're like, oh, we're going to come back to this, right? And then Sinclair disappears off the show. We've talked about this where modern era, we probably wouldn't be able to get away with what we were in the 90s, where they were able to write him off and just say, oh, he was interested in other things. But they were at the time. And I mean, I'm, again, sorry to keep doing this, Mike, but Carl, in real time, at the time with lurkers, guides, friends, burrito parties, was there speculation on if Michael O'Hare leaving the show was intentional or not?
Yes, there was a lot of discussion about that. It was kind of a mixed bag. We, especially after Coming of Shadows, when he appeared, you know, on the data crystal screen to Michael, then we started to think, oh, he probably did this because JMS had been, you know, posting online for a long time. And so we started to just assume that this was written in on purpose. So there wasn't a lot of doubt or concern about like why he left, especially because we kind of all fell in love with Sheridan as well. And so his reappearance was kind of like the confirmation that, oh, JMS knows exactly what he's doing. You know, he's already written this out. He wrote the last episode first. He knows where he's taken us. And so, I mean, we were all overjoyed to see him and we knew something like really huge was about to happen.
technically the lens not quite the one yet. There is an amazing episode that I really hope we get to podcast on, Mike, where she does become the one. Gray 17 is missing. But also, I'm going to take brief pause here. Carl, what are your thoughts on Gray 17 and what were your thoughts in real time?
Oh, my God. Gray 17. Well, it has been hinted at that there was something fishy happening in Gray Sector. And so this was kind of like the culmination of this weird middle triangle thing happening down below. But it was so fucking janky. But the only saving grace was the Delenn arc. It's kind of like TKO. You know, I only watched that for the Susan Ivanova story. Like that, you know, advances her character and that's beautiful. The rest is garbage. It's the same thing with Gray 17. Like the whole, you know, Freddy Krueger monster thing is just ridiculous and campy. And you just try to ignore it.
Normally what we end with is we ask our guests who has seen like one or two episodes, are you going to watch more? I think we know the answer, Carl. Actually, this is a nice place for some of the stuff you sent along. Not only have you watched more, you've added a little to Babylon 5 fandom as you did in some of the notes.
Well, I try. Yeah. Actually, I have a little blurb, an interesting blurb. So I was really involved in various like net communities, fandom communities for Babylon 5. And one of them was like a short story group where like each poster would take elements from the previous and like we'd write a little short story as a collective. And I had kind of written a whole kind of scene on Narn, kind of explaining like the council chambers of the Kari and how this and that and how, you know, Narn government and society work. Somebody had copied that and put it verbatim in the Babylon 5 role playing book. And I'm like, you gotta be shitting me. But I was so proud. I don't even care if I'm uncredited. I'm just glad that somebody's using my stuff. That's kind of cool. But yeah, I did find that link that I sent you. Someone on YouTube got in touch with the Foundation Imaging folks and got the original files for the special effects. And when they're rendered properly, they look so clean and so good, even to this day.
The cruelty of CGI. So like an example I have is, you know, Toy Story was revolutionary breakthrough. I believe won an Oscar, right? Or some, you know, various awards. And you watch it now and you're like, that looks worse than cruft I see on YouTube. So CGI is always rough. Babylon 5, the forefront of it, right? Mm-hmm. Some of it ages good, some of it ages bad. Some of it hits a nostalgic itch. That's what some of our, you know, listeners have said is, yeah, hey, it didn't age the best, but hey, I'm from the 90s. I love this, but I agree. Like the upscaled ones, some of it looks really good. I will say, here's my hot take. The gun on the ship and like the little like oval gun that shoots out and the Gatling gun just don't work. The ships look amazing, but some of the stuff I'm just like even upscaled, mm-hmm. which I mean, to be fair though, then you get in a nice question where you're like, hey, it's not, the CGI wasn't bad. That was just a silly model. And that's happened on any sci-fi show where you're just like, oh, yeah, take two on that prop, y'all.
Yeah, well, it's the way that they move, like those guns on the ships. They have this too smooth motion back and forth that just doesn't seem like a firearm is coming out of them at all. I mean, you can say it's like some science fiction things like they do with the guns on the ship, how it's not actually like a blast that's going out, but it just... the feel but doesn't hey, at least look the right in some of those things. They just hadn't gotten
gorgeous.
It
yet.
Oh, yeah. And the ship design
you
itself.
You really feel like the weight of these vessels.
Besides of just how good the CGI looks, you can tell all the thought that went into the battles, the thought that went into the design of the ships. We talk a lot about the mollusk design that went into all the Vorlon ships versus the crustacean of the shadow ships. Like, even if you don't have the technology to put the CGI up there, just like Toy Story, the story itself, the thought behind it can get you beyond what you're seeing on screen to actually enjoy the story and lose yourself in a different way.
Agreed. I have some friends who are like, oh, I can't watch this old thing. Like the graphics look bad. Well, just like suspension of disbelief, accept what it looks like as what it looks like. If you're set, you know, watching an animated thing, obviously this animation doesn't look realistic, but you're still accepting it as part of the story. So part of it is making a conscious choice to, it's not about it looking perfect or like the best of the best. It's so it looks good enough where you can immerse yourself into the story. I'm just happy that with the HBO remaster, they finally did justice to the special effects, because they tried to do, like on the DVDs, they tried to do the theatrical formatting, mm-hmm. which it was originally filmed in. However, the CGI was done in the square TV box, and so they had to like pull the CGI and stretch it, so even if it was remastered, it looked bad. But in the HBO version, which is now available on Amazon, they gave up using the letterbox formatting. They just went back to the square, and the CGI looks much better. And so if you get a chance, check it out there.
And is all that what's available on the Tom Smith YouTube channel, or some of that at least, or is that just on the Amazon?
Those special ones, that's just on his channel. And he took the original files using the original program and re-rendered it at, you know, 4K, 60p. And so it looks like it, as good as anything we might see on TV today. But that kind of resolution, you're not going to see outside of a computer, I think. But at least on the HBO/Amazon remaster, it looks much better than what was on the DVDs. Mm-hmm.
Nice. Yeah, well, we have that link, so we'll definitely put that in the show notes, too, so anybody's listening to this can go check that out for themselves. It's worth watching.
Oh, yes.
And so that's more, we have more Babylon 5 stuff for people to check out. I'm going to be, if you have the link to the role-playing guide, interesting, I'm conflicted. I don't know if I want it to make money, but then if I buy it used, because if you're not getting, but I'm still definitely interested.
Dre went with used. And hey, if you're listening to this on the day of release, hi, Mom and Dad, I got the birthday card, thank you. Join us next week for a holiday special episode where we cover the least essential episode of Babylon 5, Season 3, Episode 19, Gray 17 is Missing with David Bell. Cheers, all.